Ready?
I was born ready.
I can honestly say that's the best news I've heard all day.
Joe Torti Show.
Kind of reminded me of a dark, gothic Neil Diamond.
That's like exactly what I'm going for.
This is the Joe Torti Show.
What show are you listening to?
Joe Torti Show.
I'm trying to be patient, but you're making it incredibly difficult.
I can say big loud things. I can be dramatic with them.
Can we just end this already?
Now it's time. The Joe Torti Show.
What's going on, Philadelphia? Joe Torti here with you. 97.5 The Fanatic. Hope that you and yours are having an awesome week. It is Tyler Zuli's least favorite day of the week, Thursday. I don't mind Thursdays. I'm cool with Thursdays, and I'm cool with the conversation that's been going on so far today. Hope that everybody is really enjoying the weather. It is a good time to start getting back outside, taking your walks, your bike rides, whatever else you're going to do. Get some of that fresh air because things are pretty good right now. We've got some national parks opening up for Memorial Day weekend. Beaches are open. It's a good time here, and it's a good opportunity to start getting some fresh air, hearing some fresh stuff, seeing some new goodness instead of the same old tired stuff that some other people might be putting out there. You know, like quarterback controversies for somebody who's not here and lost jobs to Gardner Minshew and is going to beat out Mitchell Trubisky. Like, that's some kind of like massive conquering of Rome or something like that. But that's not going to happen. That's not going to happen here today. We've got instead much more highbrow stuff like what if you removed warm-up pitches for pitchers who have already been in the game? You know, high-level stuff like that. We've got what if the NHL is actually doing this 24-team tournament thing, best of three situation. What happens if a team just happens to get cold that, coming out of this thing was doing really, really well, like, the Flyers, and they're forced to play in some kind of best of three situation and lose two games, and all of a sudden one of the best teams in the NHL doesn't get a chance to make a run to the Stanley Cup final. We're going to get into the top fives that you saw come out earlier today. I have to say, on first glance, the Sixers top five is going to end up being a top five of all of the NBA starting fives. We've got that. We got plenty more action here today. Tyler Zuli's producing, as I mentioned, despite the fact that Thursday is Tyler's least favorite day of the week. He is here. He is enthusiastic. He is having a mild allergic reaction to everything that's going on outside that is starting to escalate in intensity. But we're here, and we're going to do what we can. I want to start with the return to play stuff because it's not necessarily that, I am overly excited for a return to play, which I am, but it's not why. It's because the thing that I hear most when I'm talking to you, when whether it's, me and you see me on the street or you're one of my buddies texting me or you're reaching out on Twitter or you're calling in, the thing that I get the most is what is the update regarding reopening? What is the update regarding a return to play? Now, there are people that are taking in Korean baseball that never would have before, are becoming NASCAR fans, or are picking up Bundesliga teams and that sort of thing. The big news from this, at least in terms of the headline, there's not a whole lot of substantive stuff. But the Players Association in Major League Baseball reportedly reviewing the return to play proposal. What was it, 60-some-odd pages that the Major League Baseball Board of Governors or whatever group put that together issued to the Players Association to say, hey, this is our plan. They are reviewing that, trying to respond to that, and they are looking to get back into conversations and negotiations with Major League Baseball, who I have said from the beginning has the most to gain from turning this whole thing around. NBA and the NHL, I do believe that there is still interest, right? Clearly. The issue is that you're running into the time when people are Well, the seasons are ending, right? I mean, like in May and June, you're seeing both the Stanley Cup final and the NBA finals come to an end. And you're seeing baseball really start to capture the minds and the imaginations of sports fans across the country and across the world. I have long said that Major League Baseball has the most to gain from getting together a safe, effective plan for reopening and beginning things. Now, the new information saying that the virus spreads more, it has more difficulty spreading on surfaces and objects than some people initially thought, is a tremendous benefit for baseball on several levels. Because one, I would say that it removes one of the largest obstacles that a sport like baseball faces. Like you look at the other sports, hockey, basketball, not necessarily football, but perhaps depending on the team. Indoor sports, you would think the close proximity indoors presents a natural issue in a pandemic era for return to play. Baseball doesn't necessarily have that. It's why I said that I don't know why golf events are not returning sooner. Golf seems like it'd be an easy sport for social distancing to take place in, and you don't necessarily need fans in galleries and stuff like that. I've long thought that golf should be one of the first to return. But baseball, now that that information has come out, that it seems as though this virus will not spread as easily as once feared on surfaces, such as like a baseball, coupled with the fact that you're playing outside, coupled with the fact that, while, don't get me wrong, baseball purists and fans out there, I understand that there is contact in baseball. I would not necessarily say that baseball is definitionally a contact sport. So having said that, the virus being spread on the ball would seem to be one of the biggest roadblocks in place for Major League Baseball that they would have to overcome. And at least according to the science that has come out recently, it seems like that is not necessarily going to be a game breaker for baseball returning to play. So I ask this to you and to Tyler Zuli, my producer this evening. Based on that new information, how big of a roadblock is that overcome by Major League Baseball? And now that that announcement has been made, do you consider Major League Baseball to be the first sports league that will resume things of the big four here? I know that we're looking at the NFL season as not being interrupted. Obviously, the NFL season is not, I don't think that they are going to accelerate things in any way. I feel like if they are not going to be interrupted by stoppages or anything else, that it'll likely just be business as usual in terms of the actual dates that they were originally scheduled to start the preseason, et cetera, right? But I would think that there are still obstacles that a sport like the NBA and basketball or the National Hockey League has to overcome in terms of proximity of players, in terms of all kinds of things, testing-wise, where baseball, while still needing to maintain safety and needing to maintain security for the players and their families and the coaching staffs and the employees, et cetera, right? I feel like the ball not being a poison pill ends up being a major, major benefit in any kind of return to play initiative for Major League Baseball. Now, Tyler, I know that you said at the beginning of this thing that you weren't necessarily antsy and super missing baseball because it hadn't started yet. You were missing the sports that were taken away from you rather than the ones that had not started yet. Does this, not necessarily a green light, but does this news that the ball itself might not be a major infection vector for this virus, does that move the light from red to yellow for you?
I would say probably, and I've gotten to the point now where it's met, and I think not only was it the sports that we were missing because they were already being played, but also, you know, April baseball, even though it's opening day, the allure of opening day is exciting. April baseball generally stinks. It's cold. Guys still aren't fully back from spring training yet. They're still kind of stretching pitchers out. It's really not all that exciting. You start getting into the deeper weeks of May towards Memorial Day, like we have this upcoming weekend. That's when baseball starts really getting exciting. and the nicer weather helps. So
sure.
Yes, of course. I think I'm missing it more, way more now than I was on April 3rd or whenever opening day was supposed to be this year.
And one of the things that I think about, you hit on the head, outside of opening day, considering the weather that we got in April, I don't know what the attendance numbers would have been like. I do know that now, if you're trying to do a grand reopening, and say that were to occur at some point in late June, early July, the weather is trending in the right direction for a like massive grand reopening, at least in terms of interest, right? You're not talking about jamming people into the stadiums and stuff like that. But if you're trying to capture people that said, man, it'd be a really good day to take in a ball game, and you're whatever your maximum occupancy is going to be, whether it's 45 or 55 or whatever percentage your stadium's going to be, I feel that based on the things that we just kind of laid out there, you're going to see a renewed interest in going to the ballpark, especially considering if that is one of the earliest things to open sports-wise. Major League Baseball has a tremendous opportunity here. Now, Dan Bernstein tweets in with a relevant point as the Fanatic Twitter account asks, the way things are trending, do you feel that Major League Baseball will be the first of the four major sports leagues to resume, or do you believe another sport will get back more quickly? Dan says, nope, it's going to be basketball followed by the NHL because the owners and players union are a bunch of immature children that are fighting over salary. And Dan, of course, talking about Major League Baseball and the players union, talking about the prorated salaries versus a revenue split. And that was something that kind of came to a head a couple of weeks ago. I have to admit, though, I think that new information will change things. Like, don't get me wrong. I believe that there will always be, if owners and players too, but owners especially, if there's a chance to take a closer look at labor agreements, bargaining, try to reopen things, renegotiate terms, etc., however you want to put it, right? Some people would say breaking labor agreements off early. I feel like owners will seize those when they have the opportunity to, unless they're locked into an incredibly pro-owner setup. But I do think that part of, at least some of the reasoning behind these, the Players Association pushing back and talking about how they don't want to put their families at risk and stuff like that, part of it is likely just negotiating bluster. But part of it was also the idea that you're passing around the ball that conceivably could be getting everyone sick if someone's been exposed to coronavirus. Now, with the new information that surface contact is less likely to be a damning, determining, distribution vector, now you have the opportunity to maybe get that out of the way and see how people's minds and opinions change, especially if you're going to be one of those players handling the ball. Also, in the world of the NFL, and right on cue, this also appears on the 97.5 The Fanatic Twitter account. That's why Tyler Zuli's the best in the business. If you've seen Dak Prescott news recently, it's been all Dak Prescott versus Dallas Cowboys in terms of salary negotiation. However, reportedly, Dak Prescott was offered a 5-year, $175 million contract from Dallas, which would make him the highest paid quarterback in NFL history. Now, this article says that Dak's reportedly seeking more than $45 million per year to play for Dallas. I didn't see that. I saw that Dak was requesting or seeking $45 million in his last year of the contract. So I'm not sure how much of that is true. And then Adam Schefter tweeting out 4 hours ago today, to clarify any recent speculation on Dak Prescott's contract negotiations, there have been no discussions on other scenarios other than the Cowboys wanting a longer deal and Prescott wanting a shorter deal, per source. Here's what I have never understood. I know that Dak would want to get to the next contract, presumably, and who knows if this 5-year, $175 million deal is real. I have to say, if it is false, there's no way that it came from the Prescott camp. Like, that reported contract, if that is leaked and it is untrue, that is coming out from somebody in the Cowboys organization trying to paint it as, we're trying to be as fair to Dak and as reasonable as we can be. This guy's trying to hold us over a barrel for $50 million a year or whatever. I don't think that that's likely. I don't think that 5 years, $175 million is on the table either. But if it is, based on the Dak Prescott contract obstacles, what would help the Eagles more? This is the poll on 97.5, the Fanatics Twitter account. Dak gets the money, big cap hit, or Dak leaves the Cowboys in free agency. Which of those helps the Eagles more? I am very, very torn on this. So this is an excellent question. The reason that I'm torn on this, I'm going to say Dak getting the money and the big cap hit is more damning for the Cowboys. Not necessarily because I feel some way about Dak Prescott, but more to the fact that I feel some way about Amari Cooper and some of the other people that they have already spent big money on. You're going to get kind of tied up. And unless the Cowboys continue to nail draft picks and stuff like that, which it looks like they nailed this draft, we don't know, then things could fall apart for them quickly. However, and I know that some people in Philadelphia are not going to want to hear this. This is not saying that Dak Prescott is an elite quarterback or he's one of the top 3 or 5 or 10, whatever number you want to put on it. I'm not saying anything about Dak qualitatively other than, in my opinion, he is a starting quarterback in the NFL. I consider those guys difficult to find. And I don't mean a quarterback who has a starting job in the NFL. I consider Dak Prescott to be a worthy starting quarterback in the NFL. If he were to leave the Cowboys in free agency, based on what I know, that leaves the Cowboys without a quarterback that they have, who is a bona fide starting quarterback. And so you're left a cap-strapped team in search of the next starting quarterback. And ask the Chicago Bears, ask the Jacksonville Jaguars. Those dudes do not grow on trees. They are difficult to find. And so if you don't have one, chances are you're not going to win a whole lot anyway. So fantastic question, Tyler. Where do you come down on that, by the way? First of all, hello.
Hi, Joe.
How are you? Doing great.
Thanks.
How are you?
Thanks for having me, even though I can not really see right now.
That's okay. Just trust that I'm here.
We'll make it work. Yeah. I know where all the buttons are, so I could probably do this
with
my
muscle memory.
Closed,
yeah.
But we're not going to take any chances. I am in the camp that it would benefit the Eagles more should Dak not be a Cowboy at all.
Okay.
As difficult as it is for Philadelphia to comprehend, they understand it. As difficult it is for Philadelphia to accept, Dak Prescott is a pretty good quarterback. I don't think he's great, but I think he's pretty good.
Deserved starter.
Oh,
like
for
I said.
Sure. Yep. Absolutely. I think he's probably a top 12 quarterback in the league. I think somewhere around there. So it would benefit the Eagles to go from, you know, Dak to no Dak, even though he hasn't looked tremendous in the games they've played the Eagles for the most part. Last year, I should say. I think that any time that you get yourself a quarterback that you trust and that you know can get the job done, you have to pay the guy. Because, like you mentioned, there are not enough good quarterbacks in the league. Kirk Cousins got the bag. And Kirk Cousins, I think Dak's probably a little bit better than Kirk Cousins, in my opinion. And I like Kirk Cousins.
No, so that's the exact guy that I was going to use. I would pay Kirk Cousins. I feel like you would too.
I would, yes.
So,
but I think Dak is better than Kirk Cousins
mm-hmm.
by a small margin. You know, I think they're pretty yes. similar. So I think it would be beneficial for the Eagles to not see Dak at all and force the Cowboys to go with a situation where it's either trade up to get, because you got to figure with Dak playing this year, the Cowboys are at worst an average team, right? Their
mm-hmm.
worst is 7-9, 8-8 team at the bare minimum. So they're at best going to have pick 14, 15, something along those lines.
Yes.
You force a team, force them to either A, reach on a quarterback, or B, trade up for a quarterback, or C, go the free agent route, which you mentioned earlier, hardly ever works anymore.
Very difficult. Very difficult. Now, I was gaming out 2021, and this is the insanity. We have not played the 2020 NFL season yet. I was gaming out the 2021 NFL draft quarterback scenarios. And I think that it is incredibly likely that Trevor Lawrence is the first quarterback selected. Whether he's the top pick, which I anticipate he would be, either way, a top three selection, and he'll be the first quarterback drafted. The one nightmare kind of scenario is that the Cowboys trade Dak now and get whatever they're going to get for Dak Prescott, still end up with a 14th or 15th pick, and are able to make a play for two scenarios. One, if they think that that everyone has it wrong and that Justin Fields is a better quarterback than Trevor Lawrence at the NFL level, which you could see after, I don't know, Mitchell Trubisky gets selected to the teams that really want their quarterbacks move up and go get them, and you end up with Watson and Mahomes going off where they end up, right? Or in the event that for some reason Trevor Lawrence is not the first quarterback selected, the inverse happens where Fields or somebody else gets taken first, and now Dallas has the ammunition to trade up and get somebody who potentially could be really good for a long time. I don't like either of them.
And not only that, you mentioned those two, and I think you're probably going to get at least one more within the top 15. And quite honestly, too, I don't know how far off it's going to be to see if North Dakota State, who I got to go back and check who they play, but they play a big-time school in week one. If North Dakota State hangs tough in week one or finds a way to win that game outright, Trey Lance is a top 15 pick. He might already be a first-round pick without playing this season.
They play Oregon.
That's who it was. I knew it was a big-time school.
Yeah, if they keep it close or win against Oregon,
he's a top 15 pick.
That's true.
He may not have to play the rest of the year.
Yeah, that's the truth. Plus, and here's the other thing, is that I anticipate that all of those teams that you were talking about, that we talked about needing a quarterback or whatever, New England's not doing things on accident. Like, they're not going to just throw out a guy this year just to throw him out there. That's why I don't think that they'll sign Newton. That's why I don't think that they'll sign Jameis Winston. In my opinion, the Patriots' long-term health, franchise-wise, is playing Jared Stidham this year and then seeing what happens with your draft picks. I was thinking about teams that make big trade-ups from the 20s into the top five in order to get quarterbacks. You're looking at Pittsburgh. You're looking at maybe New Orleans, if you don't believe, which I don't, that they think that Taysom Hill is the guy after Drew Brees. There are a lot of teams that are going to be in play for quarterbacks. Dallas could be one of those. Him not being on the team, though, maybe he gets traded to one of those other teams and those teams get taken out of the running, but Dallas effectively takes their place in the quarterback sweepstakes because there are still only so many quarterbacks available at this point. 610-632-0975. We'll start there with the news that the Dallas Cowboys are looking to make Dak Prescott the highest paid quarterback in the NFL, 5 years and $175 million. Whether that's a real offer or not, would you rather Dak get the big contract and the big cap hit? Or is it better for the Eagles if Dak is not a Cowboy at all? It is the Joe Torty Show, 97.5 The Fanatic.
Joe Torty on 97.5 The Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
97.5 The Fanatic.
Welcome back, Joe Torty Show, 97.5 The Fanatic. We're hanging out until 10 o'clock. Tyler Zuli's producing. The 6 o'clock hour is brought to you by Family and Company Jewelers. Visit them on Route 70 in Marlton, New Jersey, or at familyjewelers.com, South Jersey's diamond destination. Let me ask you something, Tyler, because you have played baseball more recently than I have in like a competitive or even semi-competitive state, in my case. Baseball was like one of the first sports that I gave up on because I was literally the kid who'd be put in right field and then take off his shoes and like look at dandelions and stuff. So like that was like kind of the end of my baseball
career. So the Joe Torty baseball career was not very long-lived.
Not long.
Were you the kid that was there way more for the free slushy from the snack stand after the game?
Absolutely.
That's kind of figured.
Absolutely.
It's amazing, too, because I know how incredibly dedicated you were to hockey and you
and
know,
basketball,
so,
and like every other sport.
Baseball
just never hit me. It just didn't. And it's funny because, you know, as you learn about slow-pitch softball, I get way more aggressively in, like, back into it, which I can't explain.
A couple of drinks will do that to you.
Well, you know, just saying. As a player who, you know, by about 15 years played baseball more recently than I have, obviously concerns about a virus being passed around on the ball. If you are a player in Major League Baseball, does this news affect your mindset as a player in terms of the risks to yourself, to your family, things like that? Obviously, not knowing that it's not the only risk, but I would think that it's a pretty large fraction of the concern that kind of goes away there.
Yeah, I certainly think so. The one thing that I will say that kind of counters this just a little bit, and it is because I've been in many, many dugouts and been around, you know, teammates who are all genuinely good guys for the most part, but we're all super gross. Like, baseball players and hockey players are disgusting. I mean, I don't know football players to the extent because I didn't play as competitively, but like, baseball players are gross. They spit, they chew gum, they do seeds, they do chew. Everything is very close knit. You know, there's not a whole lot of clean stuff going on. That concerns me way more than sharing the ball.
Completely, yeah, understand.
It's to the point where I think that I'd be way more willing to play the game with the shared baseball than I would be to share my bat.
Right.
I mean, no one's allowed to put their hand in my glove anyway.
To begin with, I will
literally freak out at you. I'm crazy that way. But I would much rather do that than some of the other unhygienic things that happen in baseball.
Okay. So I could not agree with you more. Having said that, I would say that, first of all, this generally served as a wake-up call. And we talked about this at the very beginning. I'm talking months ago, before this thing turned into a full-on pandemic, everything else. At the very least, this has altered people's behavior in terms of hand sanitizer and washing your hands and, like, not just coughing into the ether. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like, generally speaking, after this, if there's a silver lining, it's that I believe that hygiene generally will improve. I don't think that one day we'll wake up and be like, oh, thank God that coronavirus scare is over, so now I can go back to not washing my hands. Or you know, I think that is maybe something that comes about. Why am I bringing this up? Because I feel like behaviors like that in the dugout, stuff like that, I can't speak for you. I never considered myself a particularly, you know, dirty person, but I'm washing my hands and hand sanitizing way more than I ever have before. I feel like those kind of behaviors, like, yo, idiots, don't spit next to other people or don't, like, be coughing on, like, I feel like those are things that are more easily adjustable than how is the sport going to have to be altered if we're going to play it.
I would like to agree. I think my only issue with that is, much like any other activity that you do day in and day out for years and years and years, there are just habitual things that are really, really hard to crack. And it's going to be very difficult to not stick your hands in the same sunflower seed bag. It's going to be really difficult to not spit said sunflower seeds at the fence or on the ground. It's going to be really difficult to, maybe to a lesser extent, don't share drinks, but I guess professionally they've got coolers and cups anyway.
Sure.
So that wouldn't really help. But there are so many habitual things, and it goes back to the cleanliness of baseball, which is not great to begin with, that's going to take a really long time and a really thought out process to get it done.
I agree. Side note, the seating phenomenon has always fascinated me. First of all, the dexterity to de-shell a sunflower seed, spit out the shell, and maintain the seed in your mouth is like wizardry to the highest level.
Really?
I think so.
I mean, maybe, again, it might just because I've been doing it for years.
That's what I just like.
But it's one of those, pop a handful in your mouth, one cheek has the full seeds, the other cheek has the, that's where you transfer it over, crack the seed with the other side.
Yeah, well,
it's not that hard.
But then I'm saying, like, the idea, because the sunflower seed is a small seed.
Correct.
What I'm saying is maintaining that seed while jettisoning the shell out of your mouth is a talent to me. And by the way, this is coming from somebody who was so insecure in grade school that I had to learn all the tricks. I had to learn the cherry stem. I had to learn the unwrapping the Starburst. I had to know. It's not like I have no idea what I'm doing in terms of like oral dexterity. Okay, but is that too on the nose? But yeah, the sunflower seed deshelling and expulsion is something that I can't wrap my head around.
So, I mean, and you said you haven't played in a long time, but
long time,
as when you would, if you were eating seeds, would it be like one seed at a time?
No, I was the idiot who just ate the whole thing. I just like crunched on the shells and the seeds.
There's value in that because sometimes I do that as well.
Oh, you
just
do?
Eat the whole thing.
Okay.
But you can only do that for so many seeds before it gets to be like, you know, seeds. Fragments are stabbing me on the way down.
This is what I'm saying, which is why I didn't continue seeding, because like this idea, I'm like, what kind of witchcraft are you telling me about? I split these seeds? No. All right. Either way. Is there something that can be removed from those like traditions or habits or whatever? Like, just kind of like to remove the temptation of doing that kind of, I don't know if it's seeds or whatever it would be. But I feel like until people got into the habit of maintaining whatever the new normal is in baseball dugouts, is there something that would need to go in order for that to work?
Quite honestly, probably just about everything.
Yeah.
I mean, outside of drinks, outside of water or a sports drink or whatever you drink during the game, I don't know if you're going to be able to have seeds. I don't know if you're going to be able to have gum. I don't know if you're going to be able to have tobacco. I mean, I know they've pretty much banned that anyway, but I don't think you're going to be able to have anything because these guys are creatures of habit.
Man, I'm picturing, I wish you hadn't said that, because like I've seen too many of these. Look at how quickly things spread, and they're doing things with like airborne simulations where you can see the cloud or like paint on people's hands or whatever. I'm watching, like I'm picturing someone just like cracking a bubble in their mouth. And it just exploding like all over the. I wish you hadn't said gum, because now that's a visual that's in my head now at this point. So thank you for that. So far, the early returns on the poll, based on the Dak Prescott contract obstacles, what would help the Eagles more? Dak getting the big money and also the big cap hit, or Dak leaving the Cowboys in free agency? 71%. Say that Dak being in Dallas would help the Eagles more. 71%. Why do you think that is? Because I've got to say, when you look at what Dak has done, he's been really, really good against the NFC East in his career, including the Eagles. I'll check out his official record versus the Eagles, but he's done really, really well. Like, this is an article from, how did Dak do against the Eagles last year? Do you remember off the top of your head? Because going into last year, June 22nd, 2019, Dak was 4-2 against Philadelphia. Two losses. One was the blowout in 2017 in Philly, 37-9. And the other, the week 17 season finale, when Prescott had 8 pass attempts on 15 snaps before going to Mark Sanchez and then Tony Romo. So the loss, because Dak was the starter, it went on his record. Neither of those are, besides getting blown out, That's one really, really bad loss. I don't know. To me, he's done really well against the Eagles. I don't know how much that really helps Philadelphia if he is around. Now, the big cap hit does matter. And part of the reason that it's been frustrating to play against Dak Prescott is because as a later round pick, his cap hit is more than manageable for the Cowboys. But I don't know. It seems to me that that's something that that would work out just fine for the Cowboys if Dak was the starter. Now he went 2-0 against the Eagles last year, right?
So, no, 1-1.
1-1.
Yeah, because remember they beat the Eagles beat the Cowboys late in the season.
Oh, that's
right. To win the division.
That's right.
So game one was week 7 against the Eagles. They won 37-10.
Okay.
He went 21 of 27 for 239, a touchdown and an interception.
Okay.
And also a rushing touchdown in that game. Then in week 16, they lose 17-9. He was 25 of 44. No touchdowns, no interceptions.
Horrible game.
Yeah, not a great game.
Absolutely terrible game. So that brings his record against Philadelphia to 5-3. That's a far cry from what the last several years of Eli Manning were, for the Giants against the Eagles. Why do you think that the disparity in the voting, why is it not even close?
So I think it's one of two options. One, there is a portion of the fan base, because I have a couple of friends that feel this way, and I think many people do, is that when kind of along the same guidelines as you not signing running backs for big deals.
Sure.
Unless you have a top flight quarterback, and I don't know if Dak is top flight. He might be second tier. You don't pay them.
Okay.
And that really hamstrings you in the cap situation, especially when, like you mentioned, you've already paid Zeke, you've already paid Cooper. There's a lot of money tied up in a couple of guys. Option number two is that people see Dak as a decent to below average quarterback in this city,
right?
Because of the fact that he has one playoff win. Has he won a playoff game?
I think that he has. Because
I know he lost to the Rams in the divisional round, the one seed, and the year that they were the one seed, they did not make the Super Bowl. So he obviously couldn't have more than one that year either.
Yeah, in the 2018. Which was January 5th, 2019.
They beat the Seahawks. That's what I thought. Okay, so he has one playoff win.
Yeah.
That's why I think that people in Philly don't have a lot of respect for him, because he's not a playoff winner. I think a lot of people say that he kind of feeds off Ezekiel Elliott and a great offensive line.
Sure.
But those things all work both ways. Good lines make good quarterbacks, and good quarterbacks can make good lines by getting rid of the ball and making the right decision.
So it might just be underrating Dak Prescott here in Philadelphia.
I think it could be.
All right. 610-632-0975. It is the Joe Torti Show. Tyler Zuli hanging out with me and you until 10 o'clock. We do have wide open phone lines. 610-632-0975. Do you want Dak in Dallas long term if you're an Eagles fan or not? It's the Joe Torti Show, 97.5 The Fanatic.
Joe Torti on 97.5 The Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
The Fanatic.
Welcome back. Joe Torti Show, 97.5 The Fanatic. So we were asking on Tuesday when we were together about players that you'd want to see a Last Dance-style docuseries made about. Well, question answered. And I've got to admit, I'm a little bit surprised here that this is happening. ESPN has greenlit a 9-part Tom Brady documentary set for 2021. And in 2021, conceivably, Tom Brady's still going to be playing. Not only that, he is going to have some degree, and I would assume it'd be a substantial degree, of creative control. Connor Schell, who's the executive VP of content at ESPN, here's his quote to Deadline. 9 Super Bowl appearances over the course of 20 years is an achievement on an unmatched level. We are thrilled to have the opportunity to work with Tom Brady as he reflects on each of those 9 season-long journeys and the pivotal moments that define them. Gautam Chopra is a highly skilled filmmaker who I'm confident will bring the bring to life the story of an icon in a new and revealing way. He'll have some editorial control. Here's what this means. All of the things that would make this documentary fantastic, I'm anticipating won't be there and therefore won't make it a documentary. It'll like effectively be a 9-part puff piece, I'm assuming, on Brady. Because things that I can't speak for you. I want to hear about how great Brady is and how he got to be so great. I do. I want to hear about those things. I also want to hear about what actually happened with Deflategate. I want to hear what actually happened with Spygate. I want to hear what actually happened. We want to hear Brady's side of the exit with New England. I want to know all of it. The thing that I thought made The Last Dance compelling is that, by and large, even though Jordan clearly had some editorial control, he was not painted as a perfect human being in this thing, which, while you didn't get the entire story about everything, you got a lot that you probably didn't expect when you heard that Jordan had editorial control. So I'm holding out hope that maybe that's the case here. But those are some of the storylines I desperately want to know about because they make up part of the Tom Brady story.
Well, and I think the issue with there is you're going to get a lot of, well, how did Tom Brady rise from a 6-round pick to a Super Bowl caliber quarterback? How did Tom Brady bounce back after a knee injury? How did Tom Brady work with a guy that was deemed to be unworkable in Oakland and Randy Moss?
Mm-hmm.
It's going to paint Tom Brady as this superhero. And Tom Brady's an on-the-field superhero for sure.
Yeah, yeah.
There are too many things off the field that we need.
They got
to
have it.
We have to see it. I as much as I want to know what makes Tom Brady go and how he's still, how he made himself maybe the greatest quarterback of all time, but I also want to know all those things that you just mentioned.
I want to know about the family dynamic too. What's Tom Brady's mindset as the greatest football player maybe ever, who's not the breadwinner in his house for most of his career? What's that like? I mean, I don't know. I feel like there's a lot that could not be in there. Are you hopeful that any of that would make it in a 9-part documentary? I mean, that's 9 seasons.
I think that you probably will get football related stuff like the Spygate and Deflategate if Tom Brady is no longer an NFL quarterback at the end of this season. If this is truly a 1-year deal and then he's done. I don't know. I guess knowing how Tom Brady, I guess his demeanor is, I don't know if you're going to get any kind of family stuff.
Yeah, I would assume not.
I think he's going to keep him as far out of it as possible.
Understandable. If you're Brady, you're well within your rights to do that. Stuff that some people, like me, might want to know. By the way, I guess Brady is working with this filmmaker on another project as well. They're teaming with Joe and Anthony Russo for a documentary called Unseen Football, which is a 3D film hosted by Brady. It promises to take fans inside usually off-limits elements of the sport. What do you think that means? Unseen football. I'm anticipating practice injuries,
yeah.
Concussions. That's what I'm thinking part of that's going
to
be.
Well, with it being, what they said, off-limits to fans?
To take fans inside usually off-limits elements of the sport.
I wonder if you're going to get
juice
blow up stuff like locker room blow ups, coach player relationship breakdowns, more T.O. Donovan McNabb stuff.
Yeah.
That normally you don't see. I wonder if that'll be in there.
So I thought that was a particularly strong element. And I didn't think that the Hard Knocks with the Cleveland Browns was a terribly strong season. I thought some of the best stuff was watching the Todd Haley versus Hugh Jackson stuff bubble to the surface. I thought that was some of the most interesting stuff that they had, period. you know, you hear stuff about how the Pittsburgh Steelers broke up because Antonio Brown's throwing a football at Ben Roethlisberger in practice and all that. Like, I want to know if that, some of that's an unseen football on the Patriots side, or they're exploring stuff like that. That'd be awesome. But there you go. Nine parts on Tom Brady. I'm going to hold my nose, take a deep breath, and I'm going to watch that. That's going to be something that I watch in 2021, even though Brady's still playing, which I think is strange. Not because he hasn't accomplished enough already that you could talk about, but because the story's ongoing, especially, like, what if Tampa makes it to the Super Bowl and loses this year? Doesn't that, like, profoundly impact and change the story that gets told?
I would think so. Let me ask you this. Is it nine parts for now with the understanding that if something crazy happens, part 10 is going to be made between now and
2021?
Yeah, when episode 9 airs?
I would think so, right? I
would
think
you would have to think so.
I don't want to say... Tom Brady's already accomplished so much. So I don't want to, like, overstate this. This might be one of his... If he wins a Super Bowl with Tampa either of these 2 years, you have to think that that's one of his favorite Super Bowls. Like, one of his two or three favorite that he has. You would think this one would stand out to him in a profound way because it answers the question of, can Brady do it without Belichick and stuff? I would assume that for a competitor like Brady, answering that question with such an exclamation point would be a major, major stick-out point for any kind of docuseries like this.
I would agree. I think that if you're going to say what are his top three, if that were to be the case, it would be his first one.
Right.
The comeback victory against the Falcons.
Right.
And then that one.
And then that. I would think so. Right? There are some unremarkable ones. Beating the Rams in one of the worst Super Bowls that we've ever seen is not going to make anybody's highlight reel.
Well, that was his first one, though.
No. I mean, the new
rematch. Okay. The 13-3 game?
Yeah. Horrible. No. The first one, look, Vinatieri makes the kick. Like, there's a ton of stuff there that is compelling, even though, you know, Brady was still kind of finding his way in the NFL, to be completely honest with you. But the comeback win, and in the event that they win a Super Bowl in Tampa, minus Belichick, I'm just assuming is going to make a massive impact on the Brady story. Similarly to the fact that this won't make the documentary, but if for some reason the Patriots and the Bucks both go 8-8 for the next 2 years, I think that that's a noteworthy data point as well. Because it confirms what I've suspected for a long time, is that you can't have one without the other. That it's like a symbiotic relationship, Brady and Belichick. And it doesn't even matter if they liked each other. It doesn't matter. It's just the music that you make together works. I think that that's an interesting storyline, too, that probably doesn't get explored if Tom Brady does not win a Super Bowl. So either way, lots of angles that they can go. I'll be watching that with interest. And we'll see what that brings in 2021. But if the Last Dance has shown anything, and maybe it's just during quarantine, although I doubt it, there's an appetite for this. As far as I'm concerned, and correct me if I'm wrong, I can't think of great, compelling TV that's going on right now on the same level as Breaking Bad, as Game of Thrones, as stuff that, like, people had to watch, like compulsory viewing. The Last Dance was that. It stepped up into the power void, the vortex, whatever you want to say, the vacuum. I think that there's potential for more of these.
I think you're probably right. The one issue that I could see happening with this is the Last Dance didn't dip its toe into, like, the expose all documentary type. It legitimately jumped into the deep end, you know, head first. And became this big, unbelievable splash right away. I don't know if there's going to be one at this point that will reach that plateau again.
Yeah, can you follow up on that? Like,
I just don't know if there's any storylines left.
Not after Jordan. That was pretty good. 610-632-0975 is your phone number to join the conversation. It is the Joe Torti Show, together until 10 o'clock with you, me, and Tyler Z on The Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.